From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on WILL Radio and online at will.illinois.edu. The producer for the program, Harriet Williamson, our technical director this morning, Jason Croft. And today we open the phone lines and the email message folder for questions about diet and nutrition. Our guest is licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. And today, one of the things we'll talk about is National Nutrition Month. So listeners, join us with a phone call or by email. We're interested in your questions and ideas. Questions and comments about any kind of nutrition topic are invited. We look forward to hearing from you. The numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Our toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move. She's an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. She is the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. She's also the sports dietitian for Illini Athletics, and she leads nutrition and cooking classes at the ARC, the Activities and Recreation Center at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. You'll find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net. And again, our phone numbers here this morning, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Susan, good to see you. How are you?
Good to see you. You have to be pretty good on a day like today.
Oh, what a beautiful day. What a beautiful day. It's more like May than March.
It is. It is. We took a good walk this morning and a lot of bugs. A lot of bugs coming out. So you know that it's definitely warm.
We ran into a swarm yesterday on a walk out in Meadowbrook Park. So it is warming up. And a lot of the birds were very active.
Excellent.
So I guess that says we should maybe get out there and
that's
get going,
right.
too.
That's right. It's a good motivator. It's nice to see so many people out walking and biking and everything. It's great.
So the birds and bees are out there. We should be out there, too.
Mm-hmm.
So National Nutrition Month, the month of March, what's the goal this year for National Nutrition Month? Is there any one particular message?
There is, and this is a little bit, you might hear a little bit some different terminology this year. Every year in March, we have National Nutrition Month. And it's sponsored by what used to be known as the American Dietetic Association, and they've recently changed their name to the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. And so this organization, which is really our parent organization for registered dietitians, the primary organization most of us belong to, has sponsored this for years. And this year, the whole idea is get your plate in shape. That's the idea. So, of course, with our new recommendations going away from the food guide pyramid and towards the My Plate idea of really just taking a look at that plate, that is the main message that they want to get across. How are you going to very simply put your plate in order so that you can get everything taken care of? And the overriding messages, too, for both the Academy of Dietetics or Nutrition Dietetics and looking at our national guidelines are, you know, eat the right things, but don't eat too much, basically, because we're also looking at portion size and trying to keep things down. So if we put those two things together, balancing the plate in such a way that it's pretty easy to do, and then being aware not to overeat. And then, of course, the third part is, as you mentioned, being active and just making that activity a part of your day. Then those are really the three things we're looking at. But, you know, we can start by looking at, okay, how do you get your plate in shape? What does that mean?
And that means we're going to have that plate filled up with vegetables.
That's right.
That's the number one. That's the biggest corner of the plate.
That's the biggest corner. And if you think about, you know, if we went in kind of in succession of how you'd put that plate together, the first part would be to make half your plate fruits and vegetables. So, you know, take half of the plate. And what I encourage people to do, I mean, this may sound elementary or a little bit corny, but I think one thing you can do is even if you take a paper plate and you just mark it, you know, into quarters to just see, you could take that paper plate and you can look at that and say, oh, for a meal once in a while, it's a fun activity for kids too. You just divide it into four quarters and then, okay, let's make half that plate fruits and veggies. So you might have, you know, you might have strawberries on one corner and broccoli on another corner. So that part's taken care of. And then the second part is to make at least half of your grains whole grain. And that's a real big push the last several years. We've been hearing a lot about whole grains and what are whole grains and why are they better. And, of course, there are many reasons that whole grains are better, partly because whole grains are really the natural grain before they're very broken down, before they're refined. And so we get more fiber, we get more B vitamins, we get more nutrients in general, and they also tend to make you feel more full. So, for example, if on your plate you have brown rice, you ate the same amount of brown rice or you ate the same amount of white rice, brown rice is probably going to be a lot more satiating. It's going to make you feel more full, more satisfied. So we tend to not eat as much. So going for the whole grains puts us in a position to really lower the calorie intake naturally without having to count calories. Even though I'm a registered dietitian, I'm not a big fan of counting calories. I think that can get us very worried about just not eating, you know, too much in terms of calories, but it may or may not have anything to do with the nutritional quality of what we eat. So what we want to do with this program, Get Your Plate in Shape, is really focus on, you know, high quality nutrition, making sure that then that last quarter of the plate is a quality protein source. For some people, that might be cottage cheese, or it might be Greek yogurt, which is a higher protein yogurt,
mm-hmm.
or it may be nuts, or certainly it might be a lean meat, like a chicken breast or pork loin or beef loin. We've got to be thinking about that lean meat. I know where I'm going to be making a lot of corned beef on Saturday, and we always like to have a big corned beef and cabbage celebration, and with all that corned beef, you really got to cut that fat off. It is a little fattier meat, but it's very good.
Yeah, okay, very good. Well, when it comes to the plate, I'm pretty good with vegetables, high-quality protein, and fruit. But when it comes to whole grains, my repertoire is pretty limited. Mm-hmm. Besides brown rice, what can I put in that corner of the plate?
Yeah, you can think about things like whole wheat couscous, which is very easy. You just basically, and that you can find that in any store now, C-O-U-S, couscous. And that's a grain that I really encourage people to try because you just put couscous in the water, boil it. As soon as it boils, you stop it and then just put it to the side. It just soaks up the fluid. And you can make that in chicken broth if you want or vegetable broth. You can add any. It's really good if you add herbs and spices to it, particularly things like parsley work well or cilantro in that. Mm. And you can chop up veggies and just mix it with the couscous. That's really, really fast, easy grain that's pretty inexpensive. And another thing is things like barley even. I mean, just cooked barley. Or let's say, for example, if you have a vegetable barley soup, then automatically you have your veggies taken care of and you have a whole grain. And even though the, you know, technically people might consider corn as a vegetable, really corn is a whole grain. And so that's an easy thing. You know, for example, last night that was a grain we had. We had corn, we had melon. So automatically you have those two things taken mm-hmm. care of. And that's a great, you know, that's a great grain to think about too. And even simple things that we know, buy whole wheat bread as opposed to white bread. Use whole grain pasta.
Okay.
I made a pasta dish this week and it was the half whole wheat, half white pasta. And that works really well. It's a pasta that's not quite as chewy and maybe doesn't take quite as long to cook, mm-hmm. but it's still whole grain.
Okay. And what about beans? We forgot them.
Right. Beans really do so many things, but beans would be considered a very lean protein. So that could be in your protein area. So, you know, if we look at putting this meal together, you might do something very simple like a corn tortilla, which is whole grain. It's whole grain corn. Maybe you have beans on that. So there's your beans, there's your protein. And if you had a salad with that, you get your veggie and maybe you have an orange and throw on a little cheese on the tortilla with the beans. There's your calcium source. That's another thing we want to try to get in these meals. And very inexpensive, easy. You've taken care of everything. And so even something as simple as a corn tortilla or a whole wheat tortilla is great. And so it's not really that hard to do. And you can do it in such a way that the food really tastes great, but you're just balancing out what you're eating.
Yeah, okay. Now, this is, we've been kind of talking about the dinner plate, but what about when it comes to breakfast and mm-hmm. lunch?
Well, I think breakfast is a really easy meal to get your plate in shape with because it's very easy to have a whole grain cereal. So maybe somebody likes oatmeal or just a cereal with 3 or 4 grams of fiber or more. And so there are many, many of those out there. So there's your whole grain. That's easy. Or whole wheat toast. That is very easy too. So you've got that taken care of. Certainly in the morning for proteins, there are fast and easy proteins. My interns run some classes at the U of I for our athletes. And one thing mm-hmm. they did one night was showed all of our athletes how to make an omelet in a mug. And so it takes 1 minute to make an omelet in a mug. You basically just have scrambled eggs. You can throw anything in it, microwave it in the mug. And so sometimes people will say, oh, I would eat eggs in the morning, but they take way too long. But they don't have to take a long time. So that could be the protein, or again, yogurt as a protein, or even things like Canadian bacon, which is a very lean meat if you wanted to have meat in the morning. So you could get that taken care of. You get your grain taken care of. And then, of course, we tend to eat fruit in the morning anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be in the morning you're eating two fruits and not a vegetable. That's fine. We always try to eat three fruits in the morning if we can. You know, maybe half a banana, half a grapefruit, and orange juice, for example. That's part of what we had for breakfast this morning, because I just think that's an easy way to start your day with a lot of produce. If you're making something like eggs, you could chop up peppers in the eggs or broccoli or anything like that to get your veggies in. But so it's really pretty easy in the morning to get that taken care of. I think what we often do is we'll grab a bar or we'll just have a bowl of cereal and nothing else. So it's just a matter of thinking, oh, you know, just cut a half banana on that bowl of cereal, have a little glass of juice. Main thing with juice is you don't really have to drink a lot of it to get the benefit. So a little 4 or 6 ounces of orange juice, particularly if it's calcium fortified, it's really a great thing to add to the day. People get concerned about too much sugar or too many calories. But when you have juice, just use those small juice glasses and that'll be good.
Okay. And what about lunch?
And lunch is simple too, because a lot of times for lunch we'll have something fast or easy. A sandwich, automatically, if you have whole grain bread, you're going to get protein on there of some sort, peanut butter or lean meat. You could throw a slice of cheese on there for your calcium. And so that's taken care of for your grains and your protein. And then just take fruits. I think the important thing with fruits is that you want to, if you take your lunch or bring your lunch with you, you just want to have things that are easy to eat. So, for example, sometimes I'll throw an orange in my daughter's lunch or a tangerine. Sometimes it comes back and I'll say, oh, why didn't you eat the tangerine? She said, Mom, if you would just, I'm in such a hurry at lunch, if you would just peel it and then it's ready. So, you know, do cut apples for your kids or even for yourself. I tend to eat an apple if I bring it and it's cut up more so than if I bring a plain apple. But things like grapes, maybe, and strawberries and things that are easy to just pick up and eat when you're in a hurry. Same thing with veggies. Cut up a bunch of veggies maybe on Sunday. And so during the week, you can pull some carrot sticks and celery and broccoli and cauliflower or whatever it is. It's almost like just making it easy. This idea of the plate, when you just think, okay, I've got four places, a fruit, a veggie, a grain, and a protein, is very intuitive. It makes sense to us. But it takes just a little front loading on the prep time.
It does. We're all pressed for time.
Mm-hmm.
All pressed for time. So there we have it. So we have breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And what about snacks?
One thing that people can do for snacks is just to think to maybe put two food groups together. So, I mean, a piece of fruit's always a great snack and very easy. But you could think of things like maybe a cheese stick and a sliced apple. That's great. You have a little protein. We know from studies on protein that people tend to maintain lean mass better. They tend to maintain their lean muscle better, and they tend to be more satisfied if they eat protein with a snack or a meal. So simple things like a cheese stick and fruit, or yogurt and half a banana, or a bowl of cereal and milk. I mean, that milk's going to give you protein, so that's easy. Other snacks that might be good, sometimes I'll have my athletes roll up, if we're trying to bump the protein up for them, just roll up 3 or 4 ounces of turkey in a little tortilla. So you take that and an apple, and that's a great snack and gives you more protein, kind of that staying power.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really helpful. Or even things like homemade trail mix. It's very inexpensive. It's expensive to buy trail mix in the little packs, but it's very inexpensive to make it. So if you get sunflower seeds and peanuts or almonds, walnuts, a couple different types of cereal and some dried fruit and put them in those little snack size bags, then it's not too many calories. And it's a great snack, protein, carbs, fiber. Get some vitamins from the fruit. So it's really not that hard to do when we look at snacks. I think sometimes what we do, and I can be guilty of this too, is that if you just eat carbohydrate, let's say you're eating, you know, maybe eating some chips or you're eating crackers or you're eating granola bar or something, it's not very satisfying. And so you tend to eat more or want to eat more. And so if you think of your snacks as a mini meal with at least coverage of two of these food groups, I think you're much more apt to feel satisfied and be done with it. And, you know, then when it comes to snacking, we also know it's really, really important to just pay some attention to what you're eating. So even if you're snacking at your desk, give yourself a minute or 2 minutes to turn away from the computer and just snack while you're not thinking of other things. You're more aware of what you ate. You tend to be more satisfied. then you can go back and go on to your work.
Very good. This is Focus, and this morning we're talking with licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. Listeners, join us by telephone or by email. The phone number's in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. And we have an email question for you, Susan. How would you modify your three meals for diabetics?
Very good question. The nice thing about this program, if you think about the idea of getting your plate in shape, is that it is quite appropriate for somebody with diabetes as well. Now, the main thing we're concerned about if you're eating a diabetic diet or trying to watch your blood sugars, is we're concerned about the amount of carbohydrate you're eating at one time, because that tends to be the main thing that raises blood sugars. So for someone with diabetes, what I would do in a real practical sense, I would take the plate and I would make sure the protein is there, because, of course, protein, again, slows down digestion. It's very good for feeling satisfied, very important to have as part of a plan for diabetes. So you'd put your protein in there. And you'd look at fruits and veggies that might be lower calorie ones. Now, for example, you could have anything from asparagus to salad to broccoli, cauliflower, or even carrots that really are not that much carbohydrate. They're pretty low carb. So your veggies would be pretty easy. And then as the fruits, they're probably a big three group of fruits that are maybe more appropriate for somebody with diabetes simply because they're not as high in carbs. And those would be berries. So blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, blackberries, melon, watermelon, any kind of melon, muskmelon or cantaloupe, and citrus. So oranges or grapefruit or tangerines, all of those are lower in sugar. So those would be the three groups of fruits that you just might say, okay, because I have diabetes, I'm going to maybe bring my carbs down a little bit. Have the veggies that are low calorie, low carb, and then maybe focus more on those types of fruits. And then as far as the grain, that part just may need to be a little bit smaller. So, for example, somebody without diabetes might have a cup of corn there. But if you have diabetes, you know that that's a lot of carbs. And so you may say, oh, I'm going to have a half a cup of corn. That's more like 15 or 20 grams of carbs. That's lower. One slice of bread instead of two, things like that. So that you're still doing the exact same thing, but maybe that grain area is a little bit smaller portion, what equates to about 100 calories or so. And then your fruits and veggies are just more the low sugar ones. And that's very easy way to still have that meal be fairly low in carbohydrate, high in fiber, all the things we want for diabetes. But you're not missing anything. You're just maybe adapting it just a little bit. The other thing that you could do with diabetes is say, well, make half my plate fruits and veggies. You know, for somebody with diabetes, maybe make half that plate veggies a lot of the time. You know, maybe you have a little fruit, but you're going heavier on the veggies. You get more fiber. You get fewer calories, less carbohydrate, and you still have your grain and you have your protein.
And in terms of the carbohydrate, is it better for diabetics to have that whole grain carbohydrate rather than a white potato or white rice?
Yes, definitely. The fiber, we know that the fiber in whole grains also really helps modulate blood sugars as well as blood cholesterol.
Because it takes longer to digest.
Right, takes longer to digest. And you know, listeners may hear about things, glycemic index or glycemic load of food, meaning which foods are going to turn to blood sugar faster or more slowly. And people with diabetes are often, you know, aware of this as well. And part of what may affect that glycemic index is the amount of fiber that's in the food. And so you're looking at foods that are definitely more high fiber foods, and that's very helpful. One thing with diabetes is that we also become a little bit more aware of maybe the risk factor for heart disease with somebody with diabetes. The risk goes up a bit. And so adding more fiber might also keep those blood cholesterol levels down a little bit better. So fiber in general is just a fantastic thing for people to be aware of. You know, when we think about fibers and what someone would eat, it's just a good idea to have some insoluble fibers and some soluble fibers in your diet. And insoluble fibers would be more those types of fibers that are the whole grain, more wheat fiber. So let's say if someone has bran flakes in the morning, that's going to be good fiber. It's going to be more insoluble, which helps with digestion and keeping you from being constipated. But then maybe later in the day, you have barley and an apple as part of your plan. Well, those are more gummy fibers or soluble, which tend to help with blood sugar, cholesterol reduction, things like that. So it's helpful to be aware of which foods have more insoluble and soluble fiber and try to mix those in. If you eat a lot of fruits and vegetables and whole grains in your diet, you're naturally going to get both, and beans and peas and lentils and things too.
And what about for folks who are young or old or in between, who are not all that wild about vegetables or whole grains, how can you work them into the diet so that you kind of get used to them? Or are there things that you find with children and your daughter and mm-hmm. your work with athletes,
yeah.
young athletes, that they take to readily?
Well, the first thing I try to do is I'll take a log of what they typically eat. So we call it a diet recall, for example. So I might ask an athlete if they come into my office, say, okay, can you just give me an idea maybe of yesterday what you ate from morning to when you went to bed, or what you typically eat during a day. And so I might pull out of there the fact that, oh, they like apples, they like bananas, they like this, they like that. And then when I start, then the next question I often give them is, let's go through the food groups and see what you really like. So tell me what fruits you like or veggies you like. And if the list is pretty slim, mm-hmm. then the first thing I do is say, okay, you're already eating apples, you're already eating bananas. Let's try to bump those up even more. You like those? That's great. So you sort of take someone where they already are, mm-hmm. and you try to increase the amount of produce they're eating of the foods they already like. So that's a good first start. And then second thing I do is I'll say, well, what about this or what about this? And I'll say, well, you know, when I was a kid, I liked that, but I just haven't eaten it for a while. Or my daughter will sometimes say, well, Mom, you know, the last one of those I had was mushy. I really didn't like it. And I said, oh, well, why don't we try a different variety when we go to the store? Why don't you pick out a couple different apples that you like, mm-hmm. and we'll try new things. Mm-hmm. And so helping them understand that, oh, not everything's going to be like something you already had. One thing I say to Georgia and kids a lot when I work with them is I say, isn't it neat how as your body matures, your taste buds do too? And so just reminding them that every year they get older. I don't know if that's tricky or not, but, you know, they get older, they're able to have, you know, eat more foods and have different palate, and just be aware that, boy, whatever you liked last year, I mean, you were nine, that was a long time ago. Now you're 10. There's a lot of things you might like.
In a past life, you were in sales.
That's right.
And we've got some calls coming in, so we're going to get those lined up in just a moment. Let me remind folks that this is Focus on WILL Radio and online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. Susan Kundrot is with us this morning to talk about nutrition. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move. And she's an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. And she's also the sports dietitian for Illini Athletics. If you'd like to talk with us this morning on the phone, give us a call. 333-9455 is the number. Toll free 800-222-9455. That's the 800 number, and the email address will-talk@illinois.edu. will-talk@illinois.edu. And now we have a number of callers ready to talk with
Very
us.
Good.
Let's go and talk with our first caller, a listener on a cell phone line one. Good morning.
Good morning. I was curious, do you have any suggestions for foods that would support the structure of the nervous system?
Well, the main thing we think about, I mean, when you think about the nervous system, just a good, wholesome diet is helpful because it helps, you know, all the systems of the body. So eating as close to the ground as possible is a big help. In other words, really trying to get as many fresh fruits and vegetables, as many whole grains, because automatically you're going to get more vitamins and minerals you need. If you go more for the whole grains, you're going to get more B vitamins. We know B vitamins are very important for the nervous system. And so that's one thing to really think about. I think it is helpful, depending upon someone's age, to look at additional supplementation that you might need. You know, a common a vitamin that's, you know, happens to be low for a lot of people at age 50 or above is B12. And B12 plays a real strong role with the central nervous system as well as other things. And that's important to get tested because you want to make sure that if you need a supplement, you take it. We generally recommend most people after age 50 do take at least a multivitamin with 100% B12 because our gut just doesn't absorb it as well. But what I would suggest also is looking at nuts and seeds, because nuts and seeds tend to have a lot of vitamins. They tend to have zinc and magnesium and other things that we know play some role with the central nervous system. So I think that's really, really helpful. And the other thing I would suggest people do is just periodically take a look at their caffeine intake, because We know caffeine, it's a stimulant. It really does affect the central nervous system. Sometimes people get to where they're just using more and more caffeine, and that can be pretty difficult then to, you know, do the things you need to do. And you find that if you get too much, you tend to be more jittery. And I think sometimes with a lot of people drinking more coffee throughout the day, and it's just, you know, really take a look at that, because maybe bringing that caffeine intake down to where that really helps in terms of the central nervous system as well.
I was thinking more along the lines of the structure of the nervous system, like myelin sheath.
Well, I think that, you know, we know that protein is important for the structure. We know that, again, just being in a highly nourished state is very helpful for the central nervous system. And so one thing I would encourage people to do is make sure they're getting enough but not too much food. And that sounds really simple. It's not always that simple, but making sure you're eating throughout the day so you always have good energy available. We know that in general in the body, if you're spreading your food out 5 or 6 times during the day, and like we mentioned earlier in the show, maybe having protein with a carbohydrate source so that you do have available amino acids in the system, things like that, then that would be helpful as well. But I wouldn't say, you know, I think if people are eating really, really balanced diet, varying the fruits and veggies, varying the proteins, then that will certainly help the central nervous system as well.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign. Line 2, hi. Line 2?
I wanted to ask how you would modify your diet if you want to increase your red blood cells.
Well, if you're looking at increasing red blood cells, there's a lot, you know, that might be to it. It certainly might be more of a medical-related thing as well. But if you're looking at the diet, one thing we do is try to make sure you're getting foods that support blood cell development. And we're looking at things like, again, plenty of vitamins and minerals, taking a really good solid multivitamin, making sure you have enough iron in the diet, checking your iron stores, making sure they're high enough. High iron foods that we typically think of that get well absorbed in the body are things like red meat, so beef and pork. And there's plenty of lean sources of beef and pork if you eat meat. So going with more sirloin or pork loin, looking at iron fortified cereals. You know, a lot of cereals have 100% of a lot of nutrients in them. If you look at something like Total or something like that, we often think of that. But adding that to your diet, because you get sort of an extra boost of nutrition overall. And also, then you're going to get more vitamins and minerals. And we just know overall, a lot of vitamins and minerals play a role in blood cell development for sure. And if you're eating pretty balanced, a good variety of fruits and vegetables, that's helpful as well. Because what happens in the body is that, you know, for example, you might not think of vitamin C being really important for blood cells, but really it is, because it serves as a cofactor. It kind of helps your body absorb iron, keep your iron levels up, and other things as well. So if you're making sure you're getting, you know, some really good iron sources in the diet, making sure you're not skipping meat. A lot of times people just don't eat much meat, and there are good reasons to eat meat, particularly if blood cells are a concern, and making sure you're getting enough food overall, because that's the other thing. If you're just under eating a little bit, which many people do, they just may not have enough calories to build their blood stores.
Follow up? Well, I want to thank the listener for the call, and we'll take one more call here. This is a listener in Urbana, line 3.
Is it my turn?
It's your turn.
I'm calling to ask if you have an office somewhere where people could come and talk to you in person.
I do have an office. I have an office in Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, which is right downtown Urbana, and I see clients there as well, and I also... Mostly on Wednesdays from 11 to 1, I have open hours there. And that's a time if someone just wants to come in with a few questions, or they want my input on something or looking at particular products, whatever it might be, I just keep those hours open from 11 to 1.
So on Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm. So people can drop in. Now, and the way I delineate things, if someone comes in and says, well, I really need a nutrition plan, or I've got this medical concern, and then I see them as a client, and then they would pay me, you know, as a dietitian. If it becomes more of a, you know, personal medical concern, or they want a specific plan, then I would see them as an individual client. But I also have the walk-in hours, or if you're in Strawberry Fields and I happen to be in there in my office, you can always come in and ask questions as well.
Okay, and what do you charge for a session?
Well, that varies, but certainly if you wanted to, you know, come on over, give me a call, I could talk to you more about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there a range? Is there a range?
I think what you need to do is you need to call Susan or stop in and see her at the office rather than talk about
well,
that.
Well, I'm calling for somebody else, and I would like to be able to tell them what it might cost them.
Well, I think maybe you could tell them.
All right.
Sure.
11 to 1 on Wednesdays. So, sorry, we can't go farther than that. So, anyway, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. I suppose also if you went online, you could find a range of prices for dietitians and what they charge and how to find a dietitian wherever you happen to live.
Yeah, I guess I could say that through the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, which is the website, there is www.eatrightaltogether.org, and you can go on there. There's an area that says find a dietitian, and if you put in where you live, your zip code, it will come up with dietitians in that area and link to the website. And the listener could also go to my website for that information, which is nutritiononthemove.net. So that'd be fine to go there for that information.
Okay, very good. Eatright.org. That's really easy to remember. This is Focus. This morning we're talking about diet and nutrition with licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. My name is Celeste Quinmore. After a short break.
WILL programming is made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, featuring locally grown and organic produce, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar, and bulk foods department. Strawberry Fields also offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, pet foods, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating.
This is Focus, and this morning we are talking with registered dietitian Susan Kundrat, and from 11 to 1 on Wednesdays, you will find her at Strawberry Fields. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this morning with questions, comments. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Coming up at 11 this morning, another in our series of conversations with candidates who will compete in next week's Illinois primary. The guest this morning, Greene County State's Attorney Matt Getten. He's one of two Democrats seeking the party's spot on the ballot in the new 13th Congressional District. He'll face David Gill next Tuesday. The district stretches from Urbana-Champaign Southwest to the Illinois-Missouri border and includes the cities of Decatur, Springfield, Taylorville, and Edwardsville. And coming up, your chance to talk with Greene County State's Attorney Matt Getten, Democratic candidate for the 13th Congressional District. David Inge will be the host at 11. Again, we're talking about diet and nutrition in this hour of the program. Listeners, if you'd like to join us, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. There was an interesting feature this week on Morning Edition, and I ran it in the noon hour again, mm-hmm. about herbs and spices and how good they are for us. And one of the examples that they gave was the spices and the herbs of India.
Mm-hmm.
Turmeric,
yes.
For example, cinnamon. These things are pretty potent and good for us, and I was wondering if you had any information you could add to that.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's really, really timely information, because what we're finding is there's a lot of research looking at particular herbs and spices and their benefits. There have been some studies on cinnamon and decreases in blood cholesterol or helping to monitor diabetes and things like that. And part of what seems to be really interesting about a lot of these herbs and spices is they're just so loaded in antioxidants. And if we think about antioxidants, these are, you know, particular nutrients in food or key things in food that help keep the body healthy, basically help repair cells and so keep us healthy. And there is an actual way to to track this called ORAC levels, which is, there are many ways to look at foods again, but this is one way to look at foods, which is oxygen radical absorbance capacity, which is basically looking at the ability of this food perhaps to help repair cells. And if we look at the foods that are, I've got a list of the foods right here because it goes right along with what we're talking about today. And some of the foods that are the highest for the amount that you take in are cloves, cinnamon, oregano, turmeric, even cocoa powder, which is very high in antioxidants, cumin, parsley, basil, curry powder in general. And so they tend to be some of the highest levels. And if we look down the list at maybe the next 20 that come down, you've got sage, ginger, mustard seed, thyme, pepper, marjoram. So you're seeing chili powder, a lot of these things being really beneficial. And then once we get into the foods, you might hear about some of these things, but you get into the foods and then we start finding cranberries, blueberries, beans, nuts, and seeds. I think people underestimate the real power of legumes, and too, because they tend to be very high in antioxidants. So different types of nuts and seeds and those types of things. And then we get more into the, other fruits and vegetables. But a lot of these top foods, if we look at the top 50 or 60 foods for ORAC levels, they are herbs and spices. And so even using them dried, so they don't have to be fresh herbs, but they're certainly helpful if they're fresh herbs. But a lot of these dried herbs and spices are very beneficial.
So get those into the things that are on your plate.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I suppose also they would help satisfy you as well if your food is flavorful and tastes good.
Right.
You're going to eat maybe not a lot, but you're going to eat, you're going to find that's enough.
Right. And I think a lot of ethnic cooking, Indian cooking being one, but a lot of ethnic foods tend to be more satisfying because they might be more spiced or have more different flavors. And even, even things that you really might not think are very healthy, there are ways to modify them to be healthier. Last week we had a class for our athletes on Cajun cooking. So the whole thing was healthy Cajun cooking. And one of our football players was our guest chef from Louisiana, and he brought his grandmother's jambalaya recipe, but he modified it himself. He used some turkey sausage and low-fat items, just a little olive oil when he made it. We used brown rice. He put in about double the vegetables that they usually put in, and he made this huge pot, which was so good, which everybody loved, and very spicy, of course, and so it had a lot of these spices. And it was so tasty and it was extremely healthy. So everything we made was quite healthy. We've made bread pudding with more egg whites and whole wheat bread, and we used dried cherries and all these things. And it was great. And so, just about anything you make or any type of ethnic food, you can really modify to still be healthy, still work things in. And you can always look at ways to double those veggies. And that's exactly what he did on his recipe. So, that there's ways to do it, and the spices are definitely a big help, too.
And if you want to find out more about ORAC value, where can you turn?
Well, one of the blogs that I follow that has a whole list of these ORAC values is called Modern Survival Blog, and you can look it up that way. I mean, you can search ORAC levels in foods, you'll come up with different things. But this is a good one because it lists the top 100 foods. So it's just modernsurvivalblog.com, and then it's on that blog.
Okay, very good. This is Focus, and we're talking this morning about diet and nutrition with Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. Listeners, you can join us this morning by telephone or by email. No one waiting at the moment, so if you'd like to join us, we have about 10 minutes left. 333-9455, that's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL 800-222 Will, and the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Anything else in the news that you'd like to bring us up to date on?
Well, one of the things that relates to what we're talking about today is, and people who do get online may find this very helpful, we're seeing more and more programs online that are free, good nutrition programs, ways that you can track what you're doing. There have been a lot of studies looking at the way that people actually, take a look at their behavior and their eating and really just trying to be aware of that and how that's helpful. And one of the new things that's come out with this whole MyPlate from the U.S. government is a program called Super Tracker. So it's called Use the Super Tracker Your Way, which is basically on the website choosemyplate.gov, which is the whole idea of using the plate system. And you can go in there, create a profile, you can compare different foods, get a plan for your daily food group targets based upon your goals. You can go in there and track your intake, you can track your exercise, run different reports, and track your weight if you want to, and do those kinds of things. And so I think what we're seeing is even the U.S. government's trying to make things a lot more user-friendly so that people can really build into their lifestyle the things that we know are helpful. We know from National Food or National Weight Control Registry, which has been going for quite a while now, that if people just write down what they eat, they tend to eat less. If people build in a little activity early in the day, they tend to stay more active because they've gotten it done. You know, different things that we know are helpful. So I think this is a neat way. The Super Tracker is something new and something different as a neat way for people to just really monitor their own behaviors in a really positive way. So that's kind of neat what's out there. I also use a website called MyFitnessPal.com, which is another free. They're both free. That you can get on there and you can put in your information. A lot of my athletes will track on there, and then I'll go on in and be able to track and see how they're eating and how that's comparing to their exercise intake. So, you know, I think that's something that we're realizing now, I think, in a culture that a lot of people, it's really helpful to just track.
And we'll get these links from you, and we'll put them on our website. And also, though, I wanted to advocate here for people who aren't online, and I know that there are folks who don't have a computer.
Right.
Is there a particular book or a particular periodical that you like that you can pick up at the library, for example?
You bet. One of the things that I like are some of the newsletters that are out there that are easy to find. You could order them yourself or you could get them at the libraries. And one of my favorites is Nutrition Action Health Letter. And that is one put out by the Center for Science and the Public Interest. And it's a newsletter comes out every month, and it's maybe 10 pages long, if that. But it always highlights a different topic in nutrition, something that's going to be relevant in the news and people are wondering about. They always interview top researchers in that area. And then they do things in that newsletter where they will compare different foods. So they'll say, oh, this food's out. They market this as healthy. Is it really? You know, they do kind of the food sleuth things. They're also the people that people often call the food police. They're the ones who've gone into the Italian restaurants and said, hey, this is not so good or this is good. So they always have some type of comparison of food products as well, which is really good. So that's a really good one that's quite accessible. And the nice thing about nutrition, I think, is, you know, there's a lot of good information that's out there. There's also a lot of not so great information out there. So I would just tell people to just always beware, you know, take an assessment of what you're reading and where you're reading the information, because it may or may not be really sound. But
consider
this is a good
source.
One.
Okay.
Right.
Let's take some more calls. Let's go first to a listener in Muhammad on line one. Hi.
Hello. I have a question. A friend of mine told me that she heard this on Dr. Oz's show, but she couldn't explain it, that eating a teaspoon of cold-pressed safflower oil right before eating can have a significant effect on belly fat, and I just didn't know if you had any information about that.
Well, there certainly have been a lot of interesting things coming out from the Dr. Oz show, and I think much of it is very good, you know, sound information. I don't know that we have enough research to really say that if you take this teaspoon of safflower oil, because we've been getting a lot of questions about that, that it's actually going to decrease your body fat. There's some work saying, well, maybe going to a lower carbohydrate, adding the right types of fats might be helpful with keeping you healthy and having good body fat. So maybe his idea is saying, well, just do that before meals as a way to bump up some of the better fats in your diet. That's makes sense to me. I think you could do other things as well. You could certainly, I don't know that safflower oil itself is really the only fat that's going to be beneficial in that matter. But it also might be thinking that fat is more satisfying. And if you have a little fat with your meal, if you have it beforehand, it's already in the system. You might feel full longer. There could be a lot of things. I didn't actually see exactly what he said about it, but I've gotten some questions about the safflower oil, so I know people are buying it and very interested in it.
Yeah.
So I think the thing to also remember is if you would do that before every meal, then that's an extra 150 calories that you're eating every day. So over, you know, a week period, that's 1,000 extra calories you're eating over a week, which is about a third a pound of fat. So being mindful that if you didn't do anything else to modify that, it could be that you're going to gain about a, you know, a little over a pound every month. So people might need to modify their actual diets a little bit too. But I think it could be helpful, but I'm not sure we have all the data to say for sure that it is.
Okay, thank you.
Next we'll go to Urbana. Line two, hi.
Hi. Susan, I asked you a question at Strawberry Fields about coffee yogurt, and you told me that you found it contained about 34, 36 milligrams of caffeine. And I wondered how that compares with a cup of coffee and a cup of decaf coffee and a cup of decaf tea.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember that. And that may be interesting to listeners because some listeners may not have realized that there is actually caffeine in some of these coffee yogurts, and there is. That would be, let's say, for example, a strong cup of coffee, if it were 8 ounces, might have 60 to 80 milligrams of caffeine. A large coffee might have well over 100 milligrams of caffeine. Decaf coffee still has some caffeine. It may be 5, 10, 15 milligrams, depending on the kind that it is. And so it would be somewhere in between the decaf and a caffeinated small coffee, I would say.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You're very welcome. So now we're going to take another call from a listener. Also in Urbana, line three. Hi.
Hello. Can you recommend some high-protein vegetables for not a vegetarian diet, but worth looking into when one doesn't eat a lot of meat?
Mm-hmm. The first thing that comes to mind, if you do like legumes or beans, any kind of beans, baked beans or refried beans or anything, that's a great place to get protein because it's pretty high. Corn is also a little bit higher protein grain. Potatoes have a little bit more protein. Peas have a little bit more protein, so just green peas if you take them in. And most vegetables are going to have maybe 2 or 3 grams of protein for every half cup. So even by just eating more vegetables in general, that will bump up the protein as well. And then the other thing I would keep in mind is maybe not necessarily, you know, from the veggies, but there are some higher protein grains out there too. There are some cereals that are maybe 8 to 10 grams of protein that are more high protein cereals that can be really big help if you don't eat much meat. And so that's something to be aware of. And then also just always remember if you do eat eggs, eggs are a great source of protein, about 7 grams per egg. So a lot of people who don't eat meat but do eat eggs can really bump that up, or even have an egg and 2 white scrambled, almost 20 grams of protein. So that's an easy place to get it. And milk products are also good sources of protein. So yogurt, milk, cottage cheese is a great source of protein. And then again, the Greek yogurt's probably double the protein of regular yogurt.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call. And what about things that vegetarians often will turn to? Tofu, seitan?
Sure.
What else? What am I forgetting?
Yeah, even some of the, well, some of the veggie-type products that are frozen
right.
and things. But yeah, mm-hmm. tofu's great. Seitan is an excellent, very higher source of protein. Tempeh is another one that's a soy protein, but it's more in a block and more dense protein. So it's actually higher than tofu. So that's another, yeah, that's excellent. Another good source is the soy-based or some of those other vegetarian-based proteins.
Yeah. When it comes to eggs, what are your recommendations for people that, let's say, don't have any medical concerns, but are looking for the protein that an egg
mm-hmm.
has in it?
I think if you had an egg almost every day or, you know, around 7 eggs a week or something, that's good, especially if you buy the eggs now that are higher in vitamin D. There's vitamin D eggs. There's more vitamin E in some of these eggs. There's omega-3 fatty acids in some of these eggs. And eggs are just, you know, particularly for the cost and the ease and the high-quality protein in general, an egg a day would be great. Some people have many more than that. And I know for a lot of our student-athletes, that often is their protein source at night. They'll scramble up 3 or 4 eggs as opposed to having chicken, and boy, do they save money. but still get the high. It's very high quality protein.
Yeah. So. Now, the eggs that you see in the supermarket that say they have extra E or extra this or that, is that a function of what the chickens are fed?
Yeah. Usually it's the feed that the chickens eat is much higher. And so, and they might even be fed certain other fats and seeds and things like that that generally will bump up that. So I think generally from what I understand, it's more the feed that they have and how that plays out into the egg.
Okay, very good. Well, here we're at the time where we're going to have to wrap up. Anything, any last word in terms of National Nutrition Month?
Well, I think National Nutrition Month in March is a great time to just sort of reassess what you're doing. I would really encourage people to get on the links that we'll provide them, because there's a whole series of 10 tips, 10 nutrition handouts through the ChooseMyPlate.gov program. They're all really great, smart ideas for veggies and fruits, how to enjoy your food but not eat too much. And they're very practical. And so if you're interested and can get online, then that's something that you can get. If you can't get online, you could try to come Wednesdays from 11 to 1, and I could print them out for you over there at Strawberry Fields.
Or ask your librarian to help at a computer in the library. And also one of the things that I realized that at this website that you just mentioned on Super Tracker and eatright.org is that there were ideas for saving money.
Yes.
Eating well and saving money.
Right, right.
Okay. Well, there we will leave it for this month. Susan, thank you so much for coming in today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Susan Kundrat is a licensed registered dietitian, and she is president of Nutrition on the Move. And that's where you'll find her on the web, www.nutritiononthemove.net.